hello, and welcome back to a brand new episode of The Dish with Tish, your weekly pop culture podcast where no tea is too hot and no celeb moment goes undigested. How are we doing, my dishers? What's going on? How are we holding up? It has been a time. What a time to be alive. I will say that this week has felt like a month in seven days, truly. And I know we're just all getting inundated with so much information, causing so much anxiety. At least I can speak for myself. I know I have just been so anxious about all the news that's been going on. I've also been volunteering more and protesting more, and just being in the streets with the people definitely is like so good for the spirit, but also so draining and hard to deal with the world that we live in. And I hope that you're holding up good and finding moments of joy, like listening to this podcast. I had a great moment of joy this week seeing Kendrick Lamar and SZA. Was such an amazing show. If it's coming through to your town, I highly suggest checking it out, because my God, what a phenomenal concert, truly. I mean, the stage production was stellar, 10 out of 10. The lighting, the fireworks, it was just so good. And they definitely went the Troye Sivan, Charlie XCX sweat tour, with having them kind of alternate throughout the show and then doing their collabs together, which I loved. Just made the show flow so effortlessly, and it was so fun. And oh my gosh, I like forget how much music that they have together. So it was just such a treat. It was my first time seeing both of them. So oh my gosh, that really has fueled me through the week. And all of these casting announcements have also given me so much fuel. We got so much to dish on, you guys. So I'm just going to get into it. We're going to start with the Traitor season 4 cast announcement was dropped today. And it is pretty good. Minus, there are some exceptions, i.e. Michael Rapaport. Like, why? Come on, Peacock. Why in the fuck is this man on the show? This Zionist who has said the craziest shit about Palestinian people. Get him off my screen. Like, don't make me call Kenya Moore. Let's get Kenya Moore in a round table with him and chew his ass up. Once again, if you do not know, I highly recommend going on YouTube and looking up Michael Rapaport and Kenya Moore on Watch What Happens Live, and her just not having time. Kenya knew. It's crazy. Not Kenya having the foresight. Michael Rapaport and Britt Eady? Damn. We owe you an apology, Kaya, girl. Ooh. So yeah, that's a bummer. And also Colton Underwood, he bums me out. He gives me such an ick. I know he need a check. He got kids, but I'm like, please, I hope they can pull a Ulyssa a la Love Island on them and just get them out immediately. I didn't get it with Sandoval last year on the show, so I'm hoping that this time around, they can get them the fuck out immediately. And I have a feeling that is going to happen, because we've got a lot of housewives and a lot of queers. This season is going to be for the dolls. This season is for the dolls. So I'm just going to go through some of the cast. We got Donna Kelsey, which is so funny. I live. She probably watches the show and she was like, I want to do that. You guys make that happen for me. I'm praying that they make her a traitor. Like, I need that so bad. Lisa Rinna, one thing about Lisa, she gonna be in the mix. She's always a rumored castmate on some kind of show. Then we have Dorinda coming back. So happy about that. Natalie Anderson. Cannot wait to see Natalie. Ian Terry, who is such a weird little guy. Can't wait to see him interact with the housewives and things like that. That's going to be hilarious. And then we have Rob C, who is such a beast on Survivor. I'm sure I'm rooting for him. I'm sure he's going to go far. And then Tiffany Mitchell as well. Big Brother guru is going to eat. Then we have Yam Yam from Survivor, Survivor winner, slaying. Monet Exchange, who I'm so excited. One of my favorite drag queens of all time. And I knew she, the way she's been very vocal about wanting to be on the show and do better than Bob. Yes. We have Mark Ballas from Dancing with the Stars. Portia Williams, who, again, someone who needs a check for sure. Her ex-husband just got deported. She, you know, her housewife's tenure has not been great this season. So she's definitely going to be down to clown. Then we have Candace Dillard Basson is coming back from Potomac. So excited to see. She took a break. She had her baby. And now she's going to be back on TV. And I can't wait. Because if you do not watch Potomac, Candace goes off. One thing about Candace, she going to let you know. She's going to let you have it. We have Eric Nam, K-pop. Maura Higgins from Love Island, who is another firecracker. Always keeping it 100. I love these two, Johnny Weir and Tara Lipinski. I love the figure skating of it all. That really, Johnny Weir, when I saw he was on the rumored cast, that one tickled me so much. I can't even describe why, just because he's so just extra in the best way. I just am like, oh, this is about to give Alan a run for his money with the fits and everything. And I cannot wait. And then we have Ron Funches, the comedian, Rob, Snake Wrangler Rob from Love Island last season. Oh my God. I just picture him like just getting so upset. I always think of him swimming in that pool when him and Leah broke up last season and just jumping in that pool and hiding under there. He gonna do something crazy like, now you're sending three home. Then we have Kristen Kish from Top Chef, who, oh my God, love her. Cannot wait to see her. Just more of her, because like, she is so fine. Stephen Coletti from Laguna Beach. And it's crazy because Megan and I were literally just talking about him when we were doing the Love Island episode. So I feel like we kind of manifested Stephen. And then Carolyn Stanberry, another firecracker who is so, I'm just so happy to have her on my screen, truly. So this cast is stacked and I am really, really hype about it. Minus the exceptions of, like I said, Michael and Colton, like bleh. But I'm hoping that they GTFO ASAP. And speaking of casting, we've got some Bravo casting news. So we've got some departures and some arrivals in the Bravo sphere. Rachel Zoe is going to be a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills. And for my pop culture Bravo OG listeners, you know, as Rachel would say herself, this is major bananas. I mean, this is so gaggy. I really was so fucking excited to see her join in the show. Rachel had her own show, like one of the original Bravo shows ever to exist, the Rachel Zoe Project. And she's a celebrity stylist of like A-list stars. And it actually launched the career of Brad Goreski, who now is in the Drag Race family. He's a judge on Drag Race Canada, and he's Demi Moore's stylist, and she's legit, like for real. I mean, her name is on so much, like if you go to Home Goods or Marshall's, like she's like a Rebecca Minkoff, but actually like classy. Not that Rebecca Minkoff isn't classy, but like I own some of like her silverware and like her glassware. Like it actually is really fucking cute. And I just can't wait to see, because some of the girl, obviously Dorit, I feel like they're not gonna get along, because Dorit like prides herself on being such a fashion girl. And here comes Rachel Zoe, who is a literal fashion girl down. And even Sutton, I don't know. I feel like the girls are not gonna, they're not gonna be a fan because she's gonna be like, oh, that's what you're wearing. Oh, she's gonna be like, oh, how tragic is that? And also, she is the original, like, vocal, not even vocal fry, but like slow, you know, like the Meredith Marks, the Gabby Wendy's. Rachel Zoe is the originator of that in the pop culture world, truly. And even the reality TV world, to be more specific. And I just can't wait to see her dynamic. She hasn't been on TV in so long. And like her and her husband, Roger, are getting divorced. And they were married for 30 years. So seeing her single, her kids are like teenagers. Last we saw her on TV, she only had one kid. And she's just been living life. So I can't wait to get more of her. And I feel like some of the girls also are going to be a little intimidated because she did have her own show. She does have these A-list friends. She is that girl in fashion. Like, all the things that they kind of pride themselves on, she's actually living that life. You know, everyone starts a fashion line, but she's like, what is this? You say this is fashion? This is trash, hun. You know? So I'm so hyped to have her back. And also, we're getting back Monique Samuels in the Real Housewives of Potomac. She's going to be coming back as a friend of, and she has also lived so much life getting divorced as well. And, you know, she really, so much of her identity was in being married to Chris Samuels and being a mom. And I can't wait to see how her life has shifted now that she's not married anymore. Like, what does that look like, you know? Because that was, like I said, so much of who she was. So I am very curious. And also without Candace. Candace is on Traitors now, but her and Monique had one of the most nasty fights, physical altercations in Bravo history. And I'm very curious what her life looks like now. And her kids. Her kids were so cute. And they're probably teenagers, which is crazy. And I mean, Monique is a part of two legendary things in Housewives. That fight with Candace. And we're still talking about that binder. People are still trying to reheat those nachos and make a binder moment. And she was that girl. So I'm excited that I feel like Bravo is kind of learning their lesson when it comes to, you know, with Real Housewives of New York, they tried it. Getting younger, fresher influencers or like hit people, and that did not work clearly. And now they're going back in their vault and using people who are seasoned and good TV and know, have relationships with people too. Like, it's not just like coworkers. Like, there's actually so much that they can, you know, friends of, you know, being friends with famous people, all of that. So I'm glad that they kind of got it together and realized we have hundreds of people we can go through. The role Rolodex goes so hard. Let's just see who we can go back and get, you know? So it's gonna be tea. And we got some departures. Lexi is leaving Summer House, which, I mean, kind of makes sense because there's no way for her to still be on the show and it not be about Jesse. And I'm sure she's like, I don't need this check that bad. Like, I'm good. Like, I was on TikTok and she was getting her makeup done by Pat McGrath. So baby girl is good. She don't need this show. She said, I'm good. She'll be okay. And Bryn is leaving Real Housewives of New York. And I saw some tweets that were like, LOL, is there a Roni to go back to? Like, what? And I mean, it honestly makes sense anyway. It's just funny that she even posted, like, I'm not coming back because, babe, you probably weren't going to go back anyway, because the way that season ended with you. But it's just funny that she made this statement like, I'm so happy I'm not coming back. My app is doing so good. I love you guys. And I'm like, girl, who are you talking to? Are you talking to Ocean Gate, the billionaires that blew up in the sub? Because I don't know who you're talking to, the ether, because I don't know one Bryn Whitfield supporter, truly. And then we have Britt Eady leaving Real Housewives of Atlanta, the first rookie housewife to not show up to her reunion. And again, Kenya, you called it. You were right. It doesn't surprise me. Britt is just a mess and really just thought she was gonna come in and be that girl. And the girls quickly showed her, keep fucking around and you gonna find out. And she found out in the worst way. And then she's doing this lawsuit for $20 million. It's like, girl, what? I can't with Britt. I really cannot. And something else I cannot with is NeNe Leakes and T.S. Madison. So there's been some discourse about this. I actually watched the episode of the NeNe Leakes show. She had T.S. Madison on as a guest, and it was a really good conversation. Initially, you know, they were just talking about how they know each other and kind of the beef, not even beef, but like the kind of drama that's happened with them and clarifying stuff and TS's issue with Kaya, who's a rapper, My Neck, My Back. They have long history and long beef. So initially when I heard about it, I thought it was something to do with Kaya because Kaya is just so problematic and just does not need a platform, truly. But it's more towards the end when NeNe and Madison are talking, and basically they're talking about dating and things like that. And I mean, TS obviously is a gay icon and a trans icon, trans advocate, pillar in the community. And she said, you know, she's dating people, and she's always said that she dates straight men because she's a whole lot of woman. Like, yeah, she may still have her pee-pee, but she's the whole lot of woman. That's a woman, baby, period. And NeNe was like, if a man has been with you and me, I don't want him. And it was just the tone in which she said it was very, it came off very transphobic, TBH. It really, and she just doubled down on it and was very much like, she just sounded so uneducated because she's saying she wouldn't date a man who's also dated a trans woman and that he can't be straight. And the issue isn't, it's not a preference issue. It's just such a loaded statement, just with prejudice and bias wrapped in such a flippant delivery. It just, there's so many implications in what she said it and how she said it. And I just applaud Madison for giving her so much grace and educating her. And she even clocked it, like, if you dated men, there's a high possibility that he's been with a man and that sexuality is complex and fluid, and there shouldn't be so much shame and stigma because it does force men to hide parts of themselves. And she just did it with so much grace and poise, and I was really blown away by her not throwing a drink and taking her mic off and telling NeNe where to go. She really handled it so well. But it, yeah, it just bummed me out because NeNe, it's like, you, your career, I mean, you have so many ties to the queer community. You know, like, your career is so pushed and fueled by queer people. So to hear her say things and double down on that so negatively, it really bummed me out. It really did. And yeah, it just made me feel some kind of way. I really didn't fuck with that at all. But kudos to Madison, who should be protected at all costs. And it was truly a masterclass in how to deal with transphobia and conflict while a camera is in your fucking face. You know who else should take a play out of Madison's playbook is Miss Blake Lively. Girl, talk about being inundated with information. Oh my gosh, this trial is never ending. We have to keep hearing about this until March of next year. Oh my gosh. Well, the judge dismissed Baldoni's defamation case, which kind of I did assume was going to happen because he was suing the New York Times, which is kind of an impossible feat. The judge did say that he could amend two things from the suit. So we'll see what he decides to refile. And now Blake Lively has subpoenaed Scooter Braun. So Scooter Braun, you know, was the one who bought Taylor's music. And apparently he has a controlling stake in the agency group PR. And that was the company that Melissa Nathan runs and was enlisted by Baldoni to do the smear campaign on her. So now Scooter Braun has entered the chat and I'm like, girl, this is probably her being like, Taylor, can we be friends again? I'm sorry. Please don't be mad at me. Please. I'm subpoenaing the person you probably hate more in the world than all of your exes combined. So we'll see if that sticks and what's going to go on with that. I will definitely keep you guys updated on that. So stay tuned because I'm sure there's going to be more bullshit coming out about this case. And another case that might be happening is one against Mr. Jared Leto. So about 9 women have come forward and said that Jared Leto was inappropriate with them when they were underage. And okay, I do have a story about this. One of them was a girl who said she met him in 2006 when she was 16 and he asked for her phone number and then he was calling and texting her and it made her very uncomfortable. And that sent shivers down my spine because I met Jared Leto in 2006 when I was 16 at Warped Tour and he told me I was beautiful and I used to think, oh my God, that's the coolest thing that's ever happened to me, and used to flex. And then all of this came out and I said, oh my God, this tracks, damn. And honestly, it's not really, like, truly, it's some of the least surprising news of 2025 so far, but I mean, there have been rumors about him running a cult in Croatia, like a 30 Seconds to Mars cult, essentially. And I'm just like, why are we casting people like this? Like, he's about to be in the new Tron movie, which I was really looking forward to. And now that's a bummer because he's in that. He ruined Blade Runner 2049. And I'm like, okay, we need to stop giving this man opportunities. Like, who really is fucking with him like that? Like, who likes him that much? Like, I know he plays an asshole, like nobody's business, but hopefully this will stick because there have been so many rumors about this guy for so long that it doesn't really surprise me. And another thing that didn't surprise me, Sabrina Carpenter's album cover, the discourse that is happening. Oh my God. I mean, Sabrina Draper more like it, because she is the marketing. Hello, like, put her in Mad Men, give her a cigarette and a scotch, because the marketing is crazy, because it's, everyone's talking about it. And I mean, initially, it did make me feel a way. I was like, what in the Terry Richardson is this? If you don't know who that is, Terry Richardson is a famous photographer. He's been canceled since, but he used to do, all his photo shoots were very much like this. That was my first thought. So that bummed me out when I initially saw it. And I've just kind of been seeing some of the back and forth because, of course, the Carpenters, as her fan base is called, they're, you know, talking about, oh my God, it's feminism. She's making a statement. Like, you guys, it's not that deep. All her music is so sexual. Like, get over it. And, you know, she's satire, like seeing her Juno flips and positions on her concert tour. And my thing is, satire is only effective if the audience is smart enough to understand the satire. And most of her fans are not getting that. So it only reinforces their shitty hot takes on femmes and feminism. And she already toes the line of being a male gaze artist. And this kind of just confirms that for me, because it can't really be satire if it is completely empty and not funny. Like, if it doesn't actually move the needle, then it's not satire. So to me, it's like, are we just gonna laugh off the misogyny? Or is she going to make a statement or speak up about it? And I love her. I love Sabrina's persona. I like her music. I love Short and Sweet. That's such a great pop album. But it almost feels like pick me behavior in a way. same in the same vein of the Sydney Sweeney with the bath soap, you know, and people are saying it's subversive art. But to me, subversive art usually makes people feel uncomfortable, you know, and not in the way that this cover album made people uncomfortable, but like actual true discomfort, you know. Like, to me, an example would have been Sabrina looking terrified and not focused on being hot and sexy in the picture while still labeling herself as man's best friend. Now that is subversive. This to me is just for the male gaze, and it's almost reaffirming the dominant power structures, and it kind of ignores the experiences of women who are the most marginalized, which is Black women, brown women, trans women, queer women, poor women. And to me, that's not radical. That's not satire. It's not liberation, and it's not really feminism, TBH. I don't know. I've read Black Looks, Race and Representation by Bell Hooks. And in that book, I mean, Bell critiques how white femininity is consistently positioned as the normative standard of desirability in the visual culture, while Black women are either erased or hypersexualized. So I don't know. It just made me feel some kind of way. I was like, girl, get up. You know, even if it would have been like, she very much gives Margot Robbie, if it would have been like a Wolf of Wall Street with the man on all fours with her foot on his head, like no touching, that would have been a little bit, that would have gave me more than what this gave. But you know what did give? The Tonys and the BET Awards. Okay, I have not watched the BET Awards through in years, and this year it fucking ate down, honey. Oh my god. I just, first off, the B2K reunion really did it for me. The 106 and Park tribute. Oh my gosh, what a time to be alive. Back then, running home from school to catch TRL followed by 106 and Park. So that was so good. And Doechii's speech was incredible. Talk about an artist who speaks truth to power and does it with such finesse. And oh my god, I just cannot get enough of her. I love her so much. That was such a great speech. And Jamie Foxx accepting his Lifetime Achievement Award. It made me emotional. It really did, you know. And his speech was so, so good. And, you know, he said, I don't know why what happened to me did, but I know my second chance. I'm not gonna throw away my shot. I'm not throwing away my shot. Speaking of that, we got a Hamilton reunion at the Tonys. And I know some people are like, let it go. Shut the fuck up. Shut up, okay? Because I'm always gonna be singing Hamilton, period. Maybe not all day, every day, but Hamilton, I don't know. I love it, and I love them. And I did peep that Anthony Ramos was there, but he didn't get one solo. I was like, oh damn. I mean, I know he's working on a bunch of stuff. Like, he's got a lot of stuff in the pipeline right now, so it does make sense. He probably wasn't able to make a lot of rehearsals, but I did peep that. I said, oh, where's Tony at the Tonys? And Cynthia did a phenomenal job hosting. She really did such a great job. I was laughing at so many bits that she did, and the looks were so great. And then we had our Gleeks. This is 4 years in a row where Gleeks stay winning, honey. The Gleeks are winning, and it was a sight to see. I love Darren Criss, always have, probably always will. His speech was phenomenal. I said, Kieran Culkin, eat your heart out, because the way this man 10 toes down for his wife, that's okay. If you're not giving a speech like that about me, then I don't fucking want it. Like, think about Adrian Brody's Oscar speech to this one. Like, girl, please, Please. Oh my God. And Nicole beat Audra, which, you know, kind of bummed me out because that's another person I'm like, okay, well, I'm still not over the Make America or Make Jesus Great Again. Where'd you get that hat? On a Russell Brand post. First of all, why are you commenting on Russell Brand's post, period? Like, this man is clearly unwell. So even if she said I was trying to do that for God, and even her speech, like, first thing, oh my, I gotta thank God. And okay, that's fine, but she just is so, I don't know, she really is such a theater kid, truly. And I don't know, even watching the performances, Nicole's was so, I don't know, it was very like, she was good. She sounded great, but it was almost like try hard, where Audra, that was another realm. Like, that was someone who fully left their body. That was not Audra. Like, that was sensational. And I mean, she is the Beyonce of Broadway, truly the Meryl Streep of Broadway. So did she need another Tony? Not necessarily. Did she deserve it? Absolutely. But I'm glad Cole won. I'm so glad Cole won. I am so sad I was not able to see Oh Mary with them in it. I love the tribute to Bernadette Peters. They look so good. And she loved it too. Bernadette loves the look and the tribute. And it was a really good show. Both of them, yeah, BET and Tony, they did what needed to be done. And I was here for it. So speaking of here for it, we're going to get into our dishes for the week. So my appetizer is Trainwreck Astroworld. Now, you may not know this about me, but I love a documentary. I love any kind of docu-series, documentary. They just are so well done and executed so well. I'm actually directing one right now. It's been, I mean, just especially directing one, knowing how much time it takes and seeing the final product, it really is unlike any other project to make. Like, making a documentary, you know, that's years of your life, years of your life. And this one, the Trainwreck series, is very interesting to me, especially being a concert person. I love going to shows. And the first Trainwreck is about Woodstock in 99, which was, woof, a mess. And this newer one, it's about Astroworld and the tragedy that happened there. And it really was, I mean, oh my gosh, trigger warning. If you are claustrophobic, I would not watch this documentary, because it is, I had my Apple Watch on and it said, your heart rate is a little high right now, because there's so much phone footage of people getting trampled on. Like, they had their phones out and then they fell, and just getting piled on people, just suffocating. And it was really hard to watch. And it was just so crazy to me that Live Nation did not pull the plug. I was like, what? And then hearing the people chanting stop the show, and seeing the people literally trying their hardest to stop the show and save their friends and other people because they were able to escape. What a fucking nightmare it was, from the execution of the stage and how it happened. And Travis Scott, he set that precedent. You know, I completely forgot about him getting arrested after that Lollapalooza, because he was telling people to rush the stage, and he makes people, I mean, and I understand you're giving your whole pussy to your audience. You want to feel that back. I really do understand that as a performer. I get it. But you got to keep people safe, especially this is thousands of people waiting on your every word. And for you to just be so flippant and say, rush the stage, I want to see you rage, like, let's go. It's like, girl, what are you doing? And it really did change the entire concert industry after that, because I had been to shows previously where they would stop the show, but now they will literally stop the show, make sure whoever is safe, they're good, they got water. You know, I was at Riot Fest maybe 3 years ago, and I saw My Chemical Romance, and it was a huge crowd, one of the biggest crowds I've been in. Gerard made it a point. He stopped the show so many times, and he would say, hey, are you okay? Don't do that. That's not cool. Like, literally, at least 6 or 7 times he stopped the show. And I saw Paramore a couple years ago. Haley stopped the show. Are you good? Get this person some water. Make sure they're okay. She had everybody take a step back to give more room so the people up front were getting squished. Like, it, Astroworld did change the game when it comes to concerts. And just the fact that he saw someone getting carried out, and you could see the wheels turning of him being like, are they good? Because this person who's getting carried out, it's a lifeless body. Like, it is, I've never seen somebody carried out like that, for real. And the fact that he kept going, he had Drake come out, and then he told people to rage. And I'm like, girl, that is so fucked up as an artist. This is a festival that he created. He built it. And then to just be so cavalier about people's safety, I just feel that's so fucked up. The fact that no one has been held responsible and 10 people died and there's been no justice. Sure, there was a monetary settlement, but like, the fact that nobody caught a case for real, that's crazy to me. That is so, yeah, I don't know. It just, I can't fuck with Travis Scott like that. No. And I mean, I liked some of his songs, but I was never like 10 toes down for him. So this definitely, I was like, I don't fuck with you. But it's very interesting. It's on Netflix, Trainwreck. And my main course is my beloved The Real Housewives of Miami. Honey, the girls are back and better than ever. Oh my God. The Real Housewives of Miami had their premiere this week, and it was truly one of the best premieres in Housewives maybe ever. It was so good and juicy, and Miami is truly, in my opinion, the most slept on franchise. I think it's one of the best that they have, and people sleep on it, and it is so good, especially because A, they're rich as fuck. B, they're all really friends. And C, there's so much history there. So the stakes are so high, which makes the payoff so rich. And seeing the dynamics, and obviously watching reality TV, it's all about interpersonal relationships and seeing how the 1% lives, you know, especially Real Housewives. And Miami did not disappoint. There's so much going on with Larsa and Lisa, who are best friends. Alexia, who is truly, God made Alexia to be a Real Housewife. This woman has lived 20 lives in one, and she is just so truly tailor-made for reality TV. She's so good. And even getting a cameo from Teresa, we got Teresa twice this week. We got her on Next Gen NYC and Real Housewives of Miami. So Teresa was working, honey. And it's just so good. Gertie and her, you know, dealing with post-breast cancer, and Julia, who were really good friends, and now that's going to be a whole thing. And, you know, I know Gertie is a very polarizing person, but I don't think she's nasty. I don't think she is a malicious person at all. I think she talks a lot and she can be a little, you know, cringe, but that doesn't mean she's a bad person. And I think Julia is just in her feelings about it. And I'm like, give her some grace. She literally is still getting reconstruction surgeries after breast cancer. So cut her some fucking slack, you know? And it was just so good. I cannot wait to see what this season is going to bring. It is tea. Another thing, I don't know. Miami's so good. I just could talk about it forever. If you want to talk about it with me, please slide in the DMs. If you have my number, text me, because I have much more to say, but I will not keep you here forever. But if you are not watching Real Housewives of Miami, if you don't want to go back, that's okay. But I do think that it is one of the best to start from. It was taken off the air and they brought it back. So maybe like it's not all the original cast, but to see Larsa's original face to now, it is a time. But even if you start with this season, like I said, the premiere was this week. So it's still early days. You can start there because it is T. And then my dessert this week is another Netflix show called Department Q. Oh my God, I loved it. It was so good, pun intended, because Matthew Good is the star of the show. And are there any Chasing Liberty heads out here? Because Matthew Good, ooh, my man. He's one of those actors. He's not in the spotlight like that. He's got a little family. He acts and stuff, and then he goes home, and he's so fucking hot, and he's so talented too, that it's always such a treat when I see him and stuff, because I'm always like, oh my God, Matthew Good, I forgot about him, that's my man, I love that. And seeing him with the leading role in this, I was like, okay daddy, let's go. And he eats. It's really good. It's the people who made The Queen's Gambit. It's a mini series, could possibly be more. I would love to see this crew back. I'm in it. If they do another one, I'm very much in it. They all work so well together. I love these characters. I had such a good time. I love a British show. I love a British little true crime moment. And yeah, it's a good little ditty. I highly recommend Department Q on Netflix. And those are my dishes, and I think we've cleared our plates and spilled just enough tea for one week. So thanks for listening to another episode, The Dish with Tish. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and bring your appetite back next week. And I'm going to say that this episode is dedicated to Sly Stone, who was one of the greatest entertainers of all time. Without Sly Stone, we would not have Prince, Michael Jackson, Outkast, Arcade Fire. Without Sly and the Family Stone, he was truly a revolutionary artist that has never been replicated since. And we really lost such a major, major icon. And also Ananda Lewis. Ananda Lewis meant so much to me as a child, because to see a Black woman running conversations in rooms with people of such influence and power and holding her own and asking the questions that I didn't have the language to ask and look fucking cool while doing it, she really represented everything that I wanted to be. I literally wouldn't be recording this right now if I hadn't seen that as a child, because you have to see yourself to be yourself. And she was one of the few Black women in these spaces, especially the MTV generation. Like, she was an icon of not only pop culture, but Black culture, Black female culture in the MTV culture, the MTV generation. She truly raised us, and I'm just so grateful that I got to be alive during her reign at MTV and BET, and she just looks so cool while doing it, and she will be missed. Rest easy, Sly and Ananda, and like I said, thanks for listening. I love you guys so much, and I'll see you next week. Bye.